Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
It is now officially over. Antonio Brown is finally out of Pittsburgh. Antonio Brown is now a Raider. Pittsburgh sent Antonio Brown to the Oakland Raiders for a third-round pick and a fifth-round pick. So naturally, the question is, who won that trade? Pittsburgh or Oakland? And the answer is Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown won that trade. Antonio Brown did it. He did what almost no NFL player ever does. He won. He got over. And you damn sure better call him Mr. Big Chest after that.
Mr. Big Chest.
Because this guy talked a huge game, and then he went out and he backed it all up. The NBC got over in a huge way because he got everything he wanted. He wanted out of Pittsburgh. He got that. He wanted to get away from Ben Roethlisberger. He got that. He did not want to go to Buffalo. He got that. He wanted Oakland. He got that. He wanted more Jack, and he got that as well. He just got a new deal for $54 million, including $30 million guaranteed. And according to reports, that is up from $0 guaranteed over the next 3 years. Good work if you can get it. And he just got it. And pretty much everything else that he wanted as well. Mr. Big Chest just became Mr. Big Check. He worked the Steelers. He worked the system. And best believe others in his position saw how he did it. And undoubtedly will be running Mr. Big Chest playbook as well. Also, let's not confuse this part of it. Oakland did not work Pittsburgh. Antonio Brown worked the Steelers. The Raiders were merely the lucky beneficiaries. I mean, Antonio Brown executed this offseason strategy better than any pass route that he's ever run. Business, come to find out, really is booming. While just about everybody was going on about how this dude had just nuked his entire career, he was actually just setting it all up. That was a damn masterclass. All of that stuff, the incident before week 17, tweeting during Mike Tomlin's presser, the interview with James Harrison that never actually happened, the FaceTiming from an elliptical, the horrible self-gloss, the even worse blonde mustache, it all worked. It was an absolute stroke of genius. I mean, sure, at times it was pretty embarrassing and weird and petty and immature. Call it whatever you want. Just know this. It worked. It was successful. He's getting to a new team, and it's one that he actually wanted to go to. He not only got all of this, but he got it in a spot that he wanted. And on top of that, was able to jam up somebody else. What an incredible power move that was. It worked. And yes, I know he just power moved his way onto a team that went 4-12 last year. And I'll get into the Raiders part of this in a moment or two. And I know he's further away from a Super Bowl ring than before. But this was not about a ring, right? This was not about a ring. This was about money. And as the old saying goes, you can't eat a Super Bowl ring. There have been plenty of Super Bowl rings that have been pawned by guys who needed money. Getting yourself $30 million guaranteed over the next 3 years probably means he's not going to have to worry about ever pawning anything. So this was about money. It was about getting paid, and he just got paid. Great for Brown, not so great for the Steelers. He may have gotten everything he wanted, but the Steelers were left with a third-round pick and a fifth-round pick and about $21 million in dead space on their salary cap. Think about that. The Steelers just traded Antonio Brown for a third and a fifth. That's how bad it got. The Raiders traded a third-round pick to Pittsburgh last year for Martavis Bryant. And all Pittsburgh got from Oakland was a third and a fifth. So the difference between Bryant and Brown at this point is a fifth-round pick? I mean, damn, that has got to sting. That has to sting the Steelers. And Steeler fan, if you're bitter, you have every right to be. Just don't tell me that you're better off without this guy because you're not. I mean, that's just wrong. Show me a team that claims to be better without a Hall of Fame receiver, and I will show you a team and a fan base that is lying to itself. Yes, Juju Smith-Schuster is already a star, But you know what's better than having one Pro Bowl wide receiver? Having two Pro Bowl wide receivers and having an offense with Juju and AB and Le'Veon and James Conner and Ben Roethlisberger. That would have been amazing. And now that's not going to happen. Instead, the organization is looking at losing two Pro Bowl players in the same offseason, and there's no way to spin that as an improvement. And don't tell me it's addition by subtraction, because it's not. So yes, Steeler fans, you're probably pissed. I get it. But you've got to tip your hat to Mr. Big Chest. I mean, we all do. Because he got over. Huge. He got his. It worked. And now the only question now is whether number 84 for the Raiders will get to put Big Chest,
Mr. Big Chest
on the back of his jersey. And I think you better go ahead and assume that he will, because this dude has gotten everything else that he wanted this offseason. Tip of the hat, Mr. Big Chest. Man, this cat got over. Good friend of the program, Will Brinson, is my guest. Great to have you, Will. How are you?
Jim, hope everything is going well.
Awesome on this end. I got to ask you, Will, how excited are you for the start of legal tampering? Is there a more magical time of year than this?
No, there isn't. We get some real reports, some false reports, Twitter going wild, crazy numbers being thrown around. For Trent Brown, $60 million and stuff like that. It's the best time of the year. It's magical.
All right, so I'm going to go back to him in just 1 minute, but let me start first with Antonio Brown. You know, when you look at this deal right now, is there any way to say that Antonio Brown, Will, did not completely get over on the Steelers?
He stuffed Pittsburgh and the Steelers in a locker, Jim. I mean, this is an unbelievable power play by Antonio Brown. You know, when he first started demanding the trade, you think, okay, you know, this is a disagreement between the two sides. This is going to be something they work out. Ben and Brown, hash out their differences, figure out a way to make it work. Worst case scenario, Brown, ends up, getting some sort of raw deal from the Steelers, because that's how it works for players. They almost sent him to Buffalo, NFL Siberia, and instead he manages to negotiate and basically demand his way to Oakland. And look, I get the Raiders aren't good, but they have a decent quarterback situation. They made him the highest paid wide receiver in the league. And the worst part for the Steelers is Antonio Brown did all this while submarining his trade value to get basically the same compensation for Antonio Brown that you got from Martavis Bryant after seeing Amari Cooper go for a one this past year. That's debilitating for the Steelers. And, it's going to be real rough when the Raiders go out and sign Le'Veon Bell and then beat the Steelers in the playoffs next year.
Will Brinson joining us. You laid that out perfectly. I mean, the thinking had been that AB was destroying his trade value. It was going to hurt him. But not only did he reportedly block that trade to Buffalo, he ends up going to Oakland where he wants to be and getting more money in the process. As you lay out, what I want to know, Will, is how in fact did this guy do this? How did he pull this off?
It's actually by virtue of the timing, Jim, I think, that he turned on the Steelers, right? Because last offseason, before the 2018 year, they needed some cap space. And so the Steelers restructured his deal to basically make it, where they were going to have to take this $21 million cap hit. And if they hadn't done that, it would have been a lot easier to say, listen, AB, we're out of here. We're bailing on you. Go figure things out yourself. And I think, honestly, that he saw what Le'Veon Bell did last year. I mean, Le'Veon Bell bodied the Steelers, too. He didn't ultimately pass on $14 million, but at the end of the day, he got his freedom, and he got to walk away from the Steelers without actually playing for them in 2018. And Brown said, listen, I'm going to play chicken. I'm a superstar. Someone will want me. I'm not going to let you send me to Buffalo. I just won't sign. I won't show up. And that means they won't make the deal. I'll let them be known. Drew Rosenhaus worked this, on the back end magically. And the end result is the Steelers lost two of the 10 best offensive playmakers, skill position guys in the last 5 years over a 12-month span. It's crazy.
Shop O'Reilly Auto Parts. They have thousands of parts and accessories in stock. Brands you trust like Wagner Brakes, Minro Shocks, Superstar Batteries, Wix Filters, and more. They can even get those hard-to-find parts, most with free overnight delivery. Will Brinson joining us. All right, so if he, in fact, AB, went to school on Le'Veon Bell, does this mean that others will look at what he just did and follow suit? In other words, is there now a playbook for what you want to do if you're a superstar and you've got some leverage, or do you feel like that's a one-off that can never be duplicated?
No, I think this is a little bit of a blueprint, both those guys, Bell and Brown, in terms of how you can act towards your team if you have the proper leverage. Now, you know, let's look at DeSean Jackson, for instance, right, as a semi-comparable. There's a trade rumor right now, ESPN reporting the Buccaneers are trying to trade him. The only difference is DeSean Jackson is 32. You know, he's not the complete receiver that AB is, and he has zero guaranteed dollars left on his contract. He only gets $10 million this year. So the Buccaneers, you know, DeSean Jackson can't play chicken with them, right? They're like, look, dude, we don't owe you any money. We'll just cut you. See you later. The Steelers couldn't do that with Brown. And if they had a malcontent in Brown hanging around the locker room, causing issues with Ben Roethlisberger, causing issues with other teammates, stirring things up, you know, creating drama with Mike Tomlin, and they had that $21 million cap hit. They also had the $2.5 million roster bonus due on March 17th. There were just so many variables with that AB situation that I think this is one of those things where if you are a superstar and you're worried about your long-term future with the team, get your agent to go to him and get him to restructure like that so you can push some of that money. You get cash right away, and you can leverage them later in terms of your contract. So, yes, there is a blueprint, but it does need to be a special sort of situation with a particular type of high-end player.
Right, and a special sort of personality like Mr. Big Chest to pull it off the way he did. Will Brinson joining us. So from the Raiders' standpoint, Will, what do you make of the fact that the Raiders did not want to pay Khalil Mack in his prime, but they are willing to pay Antonio Brown?
Here's my theory, Jim. I think John Gruden came back and said, all right, John Gruden's the type of guy where you can see him wanting to rip apart a roster, remake it entirely in his own image. And that's what he was doing by shipping out Amari Cooper, shipping out Khalil Mack. And now I think what happened was he wanted to try and slow play this, believing he was a good enough coach to win early on because of his coaching skills, and then to get these young players who he's drafting to peak as this team got to Vegas in either 2020 or 2021. I also think he's enough of a psychopath, and I mean this in a complimentary Jim Harbaugh kind of way. I think he's enough of a psychopath that he was not willing to lose all those games, again this year. And so he said, all right, screw it. I'm going to go out and get some big-time talent. I'm going to go get these Steelers cast off, at least one of them. He trades for Antonio Brown. I think the Raiders are going to be involved in Le'Veon Bell discussions, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if you saw those two guys, Mr. Big Chest or Mr. Big Checks, we're not sure which one it is, joined by Lev Bell in Oakland. And then if you see what the Raiders have in the draft, you know, they just signed Trent Brown, so they're spending big on offensive free agency. They might be willing to spend big draft capital on defensive players, and you can sort of talk yourself into squinting at Oakland and seeing them as a playoff contender if they do make all these moves. But I would guess at the end of the day, typically teams that spend all that money in free agency aren't the teams left standing at the end of the year. So I'm a little wary about it, but I like the aggression that Oakland's using here.
Will Brinson joining us for a few more moments. All right, so bottom line that, do you feel like they're going to make a hard push for Le'Veon Bell? And if not, what does the market look like for him now?
I think it's going to be better than maybe people think. You have teams in the Jets, the 49ers, and the Raiders who are, I believe, will be interested in signing Le'Veon Bell, who have a lot of cap space, who have a need. And those teams competing against each other Le'Veon Bell is a running back, and I get why you don't want to pay running backs. But the reality is that Le'Veon Bell is a game-changing running back. He is a guy, he's one of the best pass catchers in the league. I think if you lined him up at wideout for a full season, you know, he could have over 1,000 yards easy, like 1,200 receiving yards, just lined up as a wideout. And I believe he'd actually be a really good fit in John Gruden's system. And all it takes is one team, right? You know, if you get one team out there willing to spend for him, and the Jets really want him and the Raiders really want him, it could turn into a situation where I think he could end up getting, you know, that $30 million in the first 2 years that he wants, or that $15 million a year over several years that he wants, maybe even 17. I think 17 is probably a stretch, but there's going to be a good market for Le'Veon Bell. He's ultimately going to get paid, and I think we're going to look at his 2018 gamble to sit out the whole season as a pretty smart move because he saved his body and got a big free agent contract.
Will Brinson, senior NFL writer for CBS Sports, joins us once again. Will, before you go, let me get your thoughts on the Rams adding Eric Weddle. What do you think about that, especially when you look at his ability to make up for corners who like to take risks?
Yeah, it's a great point. That's exactly what I think, Jim. I think, you know, when you have Aqib Talib, you have Marcus Peters there, guys who love to gamble, Weddle can be a cleanup guy on the back end. And he's not as explosive a playmaker as you know once was. But, I mean, you know, look, who is as explosive at age 34 as they were in their prime? I do think he's a smart, cerebral guy who can still make big moves for a defense and will fit really well with Wade Phillips. I think you're going to see those guys get on the same wavelength early on. And I think Weddle will be a nice fit on that back end. I like the move by the Rams. They also, you know, brought back Dante Fowler on a one-year, $14 million deal. This is key for them to kind of shore up that defense. Les Snead makes moves. You know, you see the Patriots do this best. But Les Snead has been really good. When you sign a guy like Eric Weddle, he doesn't count against your compensatory pick formula because he was cut by the Ravens. So he doesn't hurt you in that regard. And you see that the Rams trade away those picks to get veterans, but then they're able to get the compensatory picks back by letting free agents walk. Bonus for Eric Weddle. He could drive by the Chargers facility and shoot them the bird every day on the way to work.
Man, I love that. I love that guy. I love him at 34. Actually, Will, I just thought something before you go. Getting lost in all this, though, is the poor Bills Mafia, who I loved. How much did you enjoy the roughly 60-minute career of Buffalo Bill Antonio Brown?
That was the most fun on social media and Twitter that I've had in several years, Jim. It felt like it was just desserts for a guy who, you know, sort of turned against his team that he was going to be sent to Buffalo. Yeah, it's a dagger for Bills fans because they just got pounded for like 4 hours on Twitter unnecessarily. I mean, imagine Josh Allen sitting at home trying to eat like a grilled cheese, relaxed on a Thursday night, and all of a sudden his Twitter account, his notifications are going nuts because people are screaming about him being the reason that Antonio Brown won't come to Buffalo. At the end of the day, I do think the Bills kind of dodged a bullet here. Yeah, this is a situation with Antonio Brown and the Raiders that could get – look, it could go sideways quick. If they're losing games or Derek Carr short-hopping passes, and I don't think Antonio Brown was going to go to Buffalo, win a bunch of games, catch a bunch of inaccurate passes from Josh Allen and be happy. That would have been a sour system for them at Buffalo. So Bills Mafia may have lucked out on this one.
Hey, listen, I'm glad you said that. I've got about a minute. It's not a slam dunk, is it? It's not a slam dunk that it's going to work out for AB and the Raiders.
No way. Absolutely it's not a slam dunk. When you look at, first of all, this guy, look, Antonio Brown's is a Hall of Fame wide receiver at the end of the day. He will be at some point in time. But he is, you know, he's going to be 31. He did look like he'd lost a bit of a step last year. Ben Roethlisberger had started shifting to Juju Smith-Schuster as his primary target. And if Antonio Brown and the Raiders are losing games and he's not getting his stats, and look, John Gruden's never had a guy with more than 153 targets ever as a head coach in terms of a single wide receiver. Antonio Brown averaged 171 over the last six seasons. His stats are going to go down. And I get that he's getting paid, but if Antonio Brown's stats decrease and he's not having a big year and they're not winning games, he's going to turn sour on the sidelines. We saw it with Keyshawn Johnson with the Buccaneers and John Gruden in that second season. And if Antonio Brown acts the way he acted in Pittsburgh on the sidelines, he and John Gruden are going to get in each other's faces a lot, and it could end up going south quickly.
No matter how big or small your team is, Ferguson has a winning game plan for pro contractors. With thousands of plumbing repair parts, knowledgeable associates, and the largest national footprint in the game, when the pressure is on, count on Ferguson. It is the tampering season. Antonio Brown goes to the Raiders. Raiders might not be done, but y'all just keep going back to Josie. Fair enough. Let's talk Jose Canseco. The reason, in case you missed this, that the clones are all over Jose Canseco was he was trending nationwide on Twitter last night, which of course meant one of two things. Either my man went toes up, which would have sucked because Jose is an American treasure, or he did, or he said something outrageous, so outrageous that it caused, if not the entire country, then all of Twitter to stop and gawk for a few hours. Thankfully, it was the latter. I'm happy to report that Jose Canseco is not only still alive, but he's still saying unbelievably wild things. And I, for one, am always here for Jose going full Jose. Now, some context is needed. And the context is provided by America's most obnoxious, in-your-face power couple ever, Jennifer Lopez and her new fiancé, Alex Rodriguez, a.k.a. the guy J-Lo's dating. The guy J-Lo's dating. Turns out A-Rod never wants to lose that gloss. He's proud of that gloss. He leads with that gloss. So over the weekend on a Bahamas trip, A-Rod popped the question, and according to his Instagram account, she said yes. Congrats to Alex Rodriguez, not only on getting engaged, but dealing with the pressure of having to buy a ring for somebody who has already been proposed to 5 times in her life that we know of. I mean, that can't be easy. Imagine asking a salesperson for something that's going to impress a gal who has been married 3 times and engaged 4. Yeah, I need something that is going to make me stand out. Something that is going to upstage Ben Affleck and Mark Anthony. What do you got? So while most of the pop culture world was celebrating the pending nuptials between an extremely talented singer and her plus one for award shows, not everybody was down. Jose Canseco, in fact, was going the exact opposite way and doing what he does best. Diming on somebody for cheating. Because the dude who dimed on pretty much every roided up 90s slugger in a tell-all book was the same dude putting accusations on A-Rod on his Twitter feed last night. And it started with this tweet, quote, "Watching World of Dance and watching J-Lo text Alex Rodriguez. Little does she know that he is cheating on her with my ex-wife, Jessica. Poor girl, she has no idea who he really is." End of tweet. I mean, damn. Jose Canseco or Joey Greco? I wonder if Jose was tweeting in that blue light. Now, since this is Twitter, and you're only allowed 240 characters at a time, Joey, Jose, was just getting started. He then chased that accusation with a series of other tweets. Quote, "I was there a few months back with Jessica when he called her on her phone. Alex Rodriguez, stop being a piece of bleep. Stop cheating on Jennifer Lopez. Alex Rodriguez, I challenge you to a boxing match or an MMA match anytime you want. And I'm willing to take a polygraph to prove that what I'm saying about Alex Rodriguez is 100% accurate." End quote. I'm not sure what part of these tweets that I like the most. There's the part where Jose claims to have been around his ex-wife when A-Rod called her a few months back. Which I think begs the question, why didn't he say anything back then? Why did he instead wait for a proposal and an engagement that he may or may not have known was coming? I mean, I don't know. Why wait? Why not go to it? I mean, was he waiting for a bigger stage? Was he waiting for them to get engaged? Was there going to be more reaction? A better chance for trending on a Sunday night? I don't know. I'm not up inside Jose's brain. But then there's a part where he challenges Alex to a fight. Now, we know that Jose likes to work out and train. However, is Jose not the same dude who once got caught sending his twin brother Ozzy into a box in place of him back in 2011? I mean, I understand that whole twin thing, and twins do things like that to mess with people and to get over. But boxing? Fans noticed a bunch of tats that Jose did not have, and then the jig was up. So there is that. Whenever Jose challenges somebody to a fight, you got to wonder. You got to ask the question. Well, okay, that's fine. But are you going to fight or are you going to send Ozzy in there to do your dirty work? And then there's this whole notion of a polygraph. Something about a guy who was selling Bigfoot in alien excursions a month ago saying that he'll strap up to a lie detector test is hilarious to me. So far, neither Alex nor Jennifer have responded to Jose's allegations. Not that I've seen. But it is 2019. We live in America. It's only a matter of time before somebody from TMZ rolls up on A-Rod and is able to hook him into some kind of clapback. And then A-Rod can do what he does best. deny, lie, deny. Look, I'm not saying that what Jose said is true or isn't true. Like, how the hell would I even know? And it's not like Jose Canseco has afforded anybody's benefit of the doubt. But then again, neither is A-Rod. Like, I don't know. I don't really care. But in this case, I'll play along. Like, who are you going to believe? Alex or Jose? Who do you believe in this case? A guy who has lied and lied again on the biggest stages? Or a guy who says that he can introduce you to Bigfoot and aliens? Hard enough to be buying J-Lo her fifth engagement ring. Now on top of that, A-Rod's got to fight off cheating allegations. But if there's anybody who's suited for that exact fight, it's got to be this guy. Deep down, I'm not even sure that A-Rod cares. I'm not even sure he's upset about it. Because any attention is good attention for this guy. And I wouldn't put it past him to have already thanked Jose for all the run on Twitter last night. I just want A-Rod to go ahead and accept Jose's invitation to fight. Cousin Yuri can be in Alex's corner as his cut man. Or whatever it is Yuri does these days. I mean, I wouldn't care less if this is true or not. Just touch the gloves, figure it out, get in the squared circle, and Jose, do not send Ozzy in your place this time. Like that one emailer said, bag on bag crime. Who you got? That's the ultimate who you got. Who you got? Better yet, who you believe? In your mind, who's scummier at this point? Are you Team Jose or are you Team A-Rod? Poncho in the 760. I don't know. I got kind of a soft spot, strangely enough, for Jose. For Josie. He used to come on this show. He was great. He was so much fun. Dear Rome, Canseco v. A-Rod. We are ready to watch. Signed, those South African golfers.
You're a thief, man. You're a cheat. I don't care. I'll call you to your face. You're a thief. Because you are...
Golf's different. Again, that's like the cardinal sin. You do not call a guy a cheater in golf. That's a reason to go. You call A-Rod a cheater. If that guy was going to fight every time somebody called him a cheater, he'd do nothing but fight all day long, every single day. And on top of that, it's true. He did cheat. And he lied. What's going to happen here? I mean, is Alex Rodriguez going to jump in the ring and accept Jose Canseco's invitation to fight or get in the octagon and go MMA? Or is he going to sit down with Katie Couric and put on a nice soft sweater and fake bake and lie out his ass again?
Have you ever used steroids, human growth hormone, or any other performance-enhancing substance?
No.
Have you ever been tempted to use any of those things?
No.
You never felt like, this guy's doing it, maybe I should look into this too. He's getting better numbers, playing better ball.
I've never felt overmatched on the baseball field. I've always been in a very strong, dominant position. And I felt that if
You're
I did my work since I've
You're
done since I was
and not a felon, but a liar.
You know, rookie back in Seattle, I didn't have a problem competing at any level.
Is that network interview, Katie, or are you also conducting a polygraph test? Have you ever thought about using a performance-enhancing drug? Have you ever used human growth hormone? Have you ever looked at anybody on the other side in the other dugout and thought, he's rich, I should be rich, I think I'm going to cheat? Did you ever cheat on J-Lo? Would you ever cheat on J-Lo? Do you love being J-Lo's boyfriend? Do you call her bae? Does she call you boo? Why am I on Yahoo? Dear Jim. Haiku. Got away from Ben. Got a truckload of money. Life is pretty good. Yours, Jennifer Garner. Wow, Brett and Bugaha. Hey, how about you, Brett? Look at you, Brett. Not bad, Brett. I never thought that I would say that about you. Charles Omenihu joins me. Charles, what's up? How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you? How are you?
How you living? How's your life?
It's good, man. Been, you know what I'm saying, training, doing kind of things like this. And I was definitely, this was number one on my list to get on the show with you.
Man.
I watched you a lot when I was little. When you're on ESPN, your radio show. So definitely a treat for me.
Big fella, good looking out. Uh-huh. And I'm aging pretty well, man. I still got my game, right? I still look good. I still sound good. The old man still has some heat, right?
Yeah, nah, you still got it. You definitely still got it.
Good, man. All right, so you've had a little bit of time since the combine experience, and that's sunk in. I know you're looking ahead to the next thing that's behind you. Mm-hmm. But when you look back on the combine, what sticks out to you the most? Because that is a very different three-day period.
Yeah, no, it is different. The biggest thing for me was just kind of like the medical exam. I remember I had like six doctors or whatever for their teams, and they're like pulling and pushing and taking this and looking at this. And I'm like, I was literally laughing because like I was like, yo, y'all, like it's four stations and y'all are all doing the same thing.
Right.
And if one station doesn't find anything and then the other three stations are like doing the same thing, I'm like, what are we looking for here? And I was just laughing. And
dude, the reason I'm laughing because we have this conversation with almost every guy who comes in. If there's nothing wrong with you when you get there, by the time they're done pulling on you, will be something wrong.
Exactly.
And if they're looking for something that's not there, they'll find it by the time they get to station four, right?
Definitely. So no, they pull at your shoulders, they twist on your hips, they pull on your ankle, they move your ankle, they look at your wrist, your back, your hips, everything, man. So it was funny to me. They were like, you probably had the best attitude of anybody. And I was just like, I mean, how else are you going to be like, it's a life, you know what I'm saying? It's an opportunity of a lifetime. And when you break it down to pieces how it is, and you get to a point where they're pulling on you each way and this, like they're doing the same thing. To me, it's just funny because like, what do you, after like the first two times, you didn't find out what you're looking for the other two times.
So you get it. You understand it.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to like it, but you know what it is.
Uh-huh.
And then you've got the meetings with the teams. What about the meetings? What did you want to make sure that the teams left knowing about you?
No. So, I mean, I just wanted teams to understand that I'm a versatile guy. I can play inside and outside. And also, I'm be a guy that's going to come in ready to work from the jump. A guy that wants to produce early for an organization. And I think that I could, as a playing the run, and definitely get into the quarterback.
Also, looking at your social game, you've been tweeting out clips mm-hmm. of great defensive linemen,
yes.
edge defenders from over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about great clips from guys like Robert Mathis,
yeah.
Chandler Jones, Ryan
mm-hmm.
Kerrigan.
Mm-hmm.
Who are some of the guys you like to watch the most and that you've learned the most from?
So I watch a lot of Chandler Jones. I watch a lot of Bosa and Aaron Donald for just kind of like the inside purposes. But yeah, man, I definitely follow a lot of the D-line stuff on Twitter and Instagram. When I see moves that either I would want to use or I use on myself, I retweet them just so like, I mean, I don't know. It's something I enjoy watching. I really enjoy studying the game, studying pass rushers, guy like that. Basically like is a transcending how to rush. You know what I'm saying? If you want to learn how to rush from inside, watch Aaron Donald. If you want to learn how to rush outside, you watch one of the best, and Bosa and Chandler Jones are definitely one of the best in the game.
You know, let's not get all that, but you look at Aaron Donald, who really is a freak onto himself, but I'm sitting with you right now and watching you play. I mean, physically,
mm-hmm.
you're not like that guy,
yeah.
but I know you study him and his techniques.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you take from a guy like that? Because physically, you don't really look like him.
Yeah, no, so I rush from a three take a little bit, and I look at it as this, like, hey, who's the best three-tech rusher in the game right now? It's Aaron Donald, you got J.J. Watt, you got Geno Atkins, but what then, as you as a three-tech rusher, how do you kind of rush? And I think I try and get guys in space, I try to get them in a bind one-on-one, use my speed, and Aaron Donald does that. I mean, Aaron Donald gets lines up really wide, gets guys in space, try to make the offensive lineman dance a little bit, and then hits them with, you know what I'm saying, a cross chop or a swipe or something like that. And it's kind of like, okay, I can translate that kind of to my game and do that to whenever I'm in the position to rush against offensive guards.
Charles Omenihu joining me in studio. Not only that, but, and obviously you've done your work, you've done mm-hmm. your studying.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, you are long. You have long arms.
Yeah.
How do you go about implying those long arms to your advantage against an offensive lineman?
So, I mean, for me in pass rush, my favorite move is a stab club. And that's basically long arming the guy and then clubbing their outside arm. And when I got 36 and a half inch arm, so I definitely like, hey, that's different. Not a lot of the guys got that. So I definitely try and use that to my advantage just for separation purposes. And then in the run game, when you're fully extended, you got arms like that, how can somebody touch you? How can they block you? So I definitely, it took me a little bit, crazy enough, to understand what I have and use it. And
you have to grow into your arms, man?
Yeah, I mean, growing into my body was a big thing, big challenge when I came into school. And then understanding, like, yo, you have really long arms. Not a lot of people have this. Use this so you don't get blocked, so you can make more plays.
Charles O'Menahu joining me in studio, getting ready for the NFL draft. You know, when you, your teammates talk about what it was like to play alongside of you, yeah, they made the point that you make a lot of huge plays on your own, mm-hmm, but you're willing to take on an extra blocker to free them up so they can make a play.
Yeah.
Hey, look, a lot of guys will not do that. Some guys are too selfish. Other guys don't want to share in that. Yeah. Why is that something you were willing to do?
Because, I mean, that's just what you got to do for the defense. If the defense has said, yeah, you know what I'm saying, you're going to take two blocks in order for the linebacker or the safety to come free, as long, I mean, that's what you just have to do. You got to do your job. If you're not doing your job, you're not going to be playing long. So my deal is I want to play as long as possible, so I'll make sure I do what I need to do to stay on the field.
Oh, so we're talking about the draft. You could have entered the draft last year, but you said you want to come back.
Yeah.
And then now when you look back on the season, you've called returning to Texas, quote, the best decision I've ever made in my 20 years of living. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that? Why was last year so special?
I mean, just winning the Sugar Bowl was a big thing. And then obtaining, like, personal goals I wanted. I said that's crazy. Like, in the summer, I had paper and I wrote down goals of what I wanted to do. And one of them was to have 14 plus tackles, 14 plus tackles for loss, 40 plus tackles, like 8 to 10 sacks, defensive player of the year, defensive lineman of the year, all Big 12. And it's crazy. I obtained all of those goals except defensive player of the year. But so it was just those kind of, just everything coming together. And then winning on one of the bigger stages at Texas and kind of propelling Texas into a light that, hey, now people think, okay, what is Texas going to do next year now that they, you know what I'm saying, they beat Georgia, was in the Big 12 championship game. So all those things combined, and then obviously with my individual things I did and accomplished was why, like, I mean, why it had to have been the best decision. I was glad that I made that decision.
That's why you stayed. That's why you went back. Now, in terms of winning the Sugar Bowl against Georgia, that was so huge, and that spawned all that question, all those questions about is Texas back, is Texas back?
Yeah.
How would you answer that? Where do you come out? Is Texas back?
I'm not going to say they're bad because that would be implying like a national championship. I think they're there. They're getting close. I definitely think that, I mean, there shouldn't be any reason why they're not in the Big 12 championship game again. But I think when you say is Texas back, you think about the Vince days and Colt. And knowing, like, Texas is going to win the national championship or get into the national championship. Right now, if we're being real, you don't know that because you got Bama and Clemson still. And they're not going away anytime soon. So, but I feel like we're back in the national spotlight, back in the, like, hey, looking awesome kind of deal. Like, look what they got brewing up for sure.
Charles O'Menahu joining us. I like that. You know, when you talk about that Texas family, you mentioned some of these other guys that were there first, mm-hmm, offensively, but then defensively. Being a part of that family means, mm-hmm, you're connected to guys like Brian Arakpo. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got to say, there are very few guys who play the game who I respect more than Rack.
Yeah.
I love this guy.
Yeah.
How'd you guys first connect? Was it after that USC game your junior year or some other time?
First connect with Rack. Wow. I think it was my junior year, 2 years ago when we played USC at USC.
Okay.
That's kind of, I think, when I jumped on the scene as a potential playmaker. And Rack reached out to me. And
how'd that feel, man? That must have been pretty cool.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you look at a defensive lineman in the recent 10 years at UT, that's kind of like the guy, you know what I'm saying? Won almost every award that you could think of for a defensive lineman, a defensive player. So he was kind of like the pinnacle kind of deal. And when he reached out to me, it was like, wow, I must be really doing something. You know what I'm saying? Alumni like him are reaching out and talking to me and telling me like, hey, we really believe that you could be something here. We see what you're doing. Continue to do it, young buck. And I took that and ran with it. And now I feel like it's my now obligation to do the same thing for the guys coming up at UT now.
All right, so what was it like playing for Tom Herman and his staff?
It was good. It was a good challenge. Definitely how things were was very businesslike and prepared me for what I'm going into now. They're to the book. I mean, if they say it's this way, it's this way, and you're going to have energy with everything that you do and passion, because that's how you win. And so it was definitely good. I enjoyed it, and I know Coach Herman and them are definitely going to keep ascending over there.
So I got a final thought for you. You said that you enjoy talking a little bit of smack on the field, mm-hmm. hitting guys as hard as humanly possible,
yeah.
and get away with it.
Yeah.
I'm talking to you right now. We're having a really nice, relaxed conversation.
Yeah.
How do you make that change? I mean, do you hit a switch as soon as the helmet and the pads go on?
Throughout the week, it's just like it's a buildup. And when we get, I would say like Friday, my mind just starts going into just visually thinking about the game and making plays, and that just brings an adrenaline rush to me. And once I get that rush, it's like it's over with, you know what I'm saying? So, and then when I go on the field, it's just like I just focus in and get this real focused and very locked in mentality. And it just, then it comes out as just anger or energy or whatever on the field.
He's got to change the clock a little bit. Now it's Sunday instead of Saturday, but
mm-hmm.
slight adjustment. He's a former D lineman from the University of Texas. I ran down that resume, a Big 12 Defensive Lineman of the Year. First team, all Big 12. This is the reason why he went back for another year to accomplish all those goals, check all the boxes, and he did.
Yeah.
Charles Omenihu joining me in studio. My man, that's how you show up. I appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
Good to have you here. Good luck
Thank
at the
you.
Draft. And like I tell all guys who I know are going to go highly, do not big league me once you get there, because when you find a place to live and work, you yeah. know I'm going to be looking for you again.
Definitely, man. I appreciate you.
Remember 1999. We are officially 20 years past that. So if you're no longer partying like it's 1999, why does the software that you use every day at work feel like it's not quite ready for Y2K? Start the year off on the right foot and find software that's, well, you know, a little more up to date. Capterra.com. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. With over 700,000 reviews of products from real software users, discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Join the millions of people who use Capterra each month to find the right tools for your business. Visit capterra.com/Rome for free today to find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. Capterra.com/Rome. Capterra, that's CAPTERRA.com/Rome. All right, so 19,812 gluttons for punishment filed into Madison Square Garden this past Saturday to watch the Knicks get busted up a 53rd time this season. But only 19,811 of those spendthrifts are allowed to come back and continue lighting their money on fire. That's because one of them said the wrong thing to the wrong guy at the wrong time and got tossed from the building for it. And if somebody is getting thrown out of MSG, you can bet your ass that James Dolan had something to do with it. Which, of course, he did. In a video that's almost too embarrassing and petty to be real, you can hear a fan standing above the tunnel yelling at James Dolan as Dolan is leaving the floor. You'd think this fan lit him up by calling him a short, fat, idiot troll who sucks at music based on how personally Dolan took it and how he responded. But it was nothing like that. It was far less insulting than that. The dude who jawed at Dolan merely told Dolan to do what everybody else in the world has told Dolan to do for years running. Sell the team.
Sell the team!
Anything I can sell the team? You want to not come to any more games?
Why?
That's rude.
What's your opinion?
No, it's not an opinion. And you know what? Enjoy watching them on TV.
Him, Black. Bring him, yeah, him, hold him for Kevin. Hold him for Kevin.
Thanks to TMZ Sports for that. That's incredible. What an unbelievable exchange. A fan tells Dolan to sell the team. Dolan stops walking, looks up and says, "You want to not come to any more games?" And the fan asks, "Why?" Dolan says, "It's rude." The fan states, "It's an opinion." Dolan then nukes the dude with, "No, it's not an opinion. And you know what? Enjoy watching them on TV."
Sell the team!
Anything I should sell the team? You want to not come to any more games?
Why?
Yeah, that's rude.
What's your opinion?
No, it's not an opinion. And you know what? Enjoy watching them on TV.
Man, somebody should recharge Dolan's vape pen. My man is clearly on edge and could use something to take off some of the edge. Maybe some pina colada flavored nicotine. Freaking billionaire just went Chuck Oakley again, this time on a paying customer who merely belted out the headline of every Knicks article written in the past decade.
Sell the team!
Rude.
Anything I should sell the team? You want to not come to any more games?
Yes, I'd like to not come to any more games. Rude. He said, you're rude. You're rude. Rude. Man, I'm not sure I've ever seen a more polite, more gentlemanly heckler in my life. The only thing missing from that was please and thank you. Like, good day to you, sir. You are looking very well, Mr. Dolan. Please, I have a suggestion. May I suggest that you please sell your team? Thank you for considering my suggestion, and thank you for your time. Rude. Man, all the guy said was sell the team. That's not rude. It's actually a great idea. Rude would be chucking a beer at Dolan. Rude would be bouncing a few D-cells off his head. That was nothing more than a slip of paper going into the suggestion box. You want rude. You want rude. Rude is what those Laker fans did to Boogie Cousins back in the day. Now that's rude.
Krispy Kreme, fat boy.
That's rude. Give me the whole thing, Alvin, man. Why are you being so chintzy?
Give him up, ref! Come on, ref. Give him up. That's a delay of giving.
Hey, ref, do your job, man. Come on.
Hey, Alvin, why is Boogie so fat? Tee him up, ref.
Hey, D, what's good, baby? Hey. AD was just staring at y'all.
What happened, fat boy? Fouled out?
Cousins, what's good?
Baby, heal it.
Fat boy, how many you got, baby? What's good, fat boy? Fat boy! Fat boy!
Donuts, baby, donuts.
Fat boy!
We got donuts. Milk and donuts, fat boy.
Hey, fat boy, I got some donuts for you.
Krispy Kreme, fat boy.
And Dolan's crying about somebody being rude. These dudes are just wearing Boogie out. What's good, AD? Now, Boogie Cousins had a reason to be upset. Dolan. And how about the end of that clip? You hear the end of that clip where you hear that dude yelling, hold him for Kevin.
Hold him for Kevin.
That's one of Dolan's security detail who was telling somebody up in the stands, hold that fan for somebody named Kevin. They want to hold a guy to eject a guy for telling the owner sell the team. Not that Kevin. TMZ reports the two cops came over to the fan, took his ID, kicked him out of the arena. It's unclear at this point if that dude was kicked out for the day or banned for life.
For life.
An MSG spokesperson told TMZ, quote, our policy is and will continue to be that if you are disrespectful to anyone in our venues, we will ask you not to return, end quote. Oh, all right. So if a fan is wearing out a visiting team's point guard, you're going to kick him out. Or if the entire arena starts chanting something during a free throw, you're going to evacuate the building. Nice policy. So-called policy, obviously, is a cover for James Petty-Ass Dolan. Because it really should read, if you are disrespectful to Mr. Dolan at all, and he hears you, you will be thrown the hell out. Ask my man Chuck Oak. I want to badly say what a horrible look that is for Jimmy D, but it's not. I mean, it's so perfectly on brand and so completely predictable. And since I don't root for the Knicks, and I root instead for content, I hope that guy never sells and just goes by every single seat in that house, one by one, 86ing anyone who looks at him the wrong way. Like, thin skin and New York City do not mix. But then again, neither do James Dolan and being a competent owner. So I guess it's only fitting that the worst owner in the league would also be the most sensitive owner in the league. But me, you know me, I'm here to say nice things. Here's something nice I could say about James Dolan. He's a better owner than he is a musician.
Wash away my troubles, wash away my pain, with the rain in Shambhala. Wash away my sorrow, wash away my shame, with the rain in Shambhala.
Never mind selling the team, just sell that guitar. Remember, this is a dude who reportedly would strum the axe on team flights after losses. And somebody on those flights told ESPN, quote, "It was the last thing players and coaches wanted to hear." So how long before Dolan books JD and the straight shot for a Knicks halftime performance? Let's just hope that Ja Rule's sound team is also in charge of that.
Are we ready? I guess not.
No, we're not. Tim Kraft is my guest. Tim, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Jim, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
It is great to have you on, Tim. I got to ask you, what's it like to wake up on this morning, Monday morning, as the Big South Conference champs and knowing that this coming Sunday, you're going to find out who you'll be playing against and where in the NCAA tournament?
It was unbelievable. Unbelievable to wake up this morning and walk into the office and we got the trophy and the net and this big 2019 ticket punched March Madness bracket deal that they're giving out. It's a great day.
Tim, I understand this. I always talk about this, but I went to a school that did not have a great tradition of winning basketball. So when you're not used to going to the tournament, I know what it represents to the staff, the kids, the students. It is such a great thing. And the fact is you did not back your way into the tournament either. In the semifinal of that conference tournament, you beat the nation's leading scorer, Chris Clemens, and the Campbell Fighting Camels. What was your approach going into that game, and then how were you able to be so successful there?
We really were just trying to do what we do and play the way that we were playing all season. We knew it was going to be a great crowd, which it was. Chris Clemens, just a phenomenal player. There's some different things game plan wise we are trying to do to limit some of his opportunities. What really helped us in the game is they have a really good post player named Andrew Udy, and he got in foul trouble. And it allowed us to zone them a little bit, which made it hard for Chris. And when Udy's in the game, they're really hard to zone because he's a terrific high post passer, can score in the high post in the middle of the zone. And he was out, so it allowed us to change defenses a little bit. And anyways, that really helped us, kind of helped us go on a run. But it was a great accomplishment by our guys to win on the road. Just great environment. There at Campbell, and then to be able to do it again at Radford.
Tim Kraft joining us. And to that point, you had to face Radford in the final. They got you by 17 earlier this season. You knew you were going to have to go through them in their place to get a spot in the NCAA tournament. What was your message, Tim, to your team before that game?
Well, we felt like we were playing really well. We had won 8 of our last 10 going into the tournament. And we have been through about every situation, Jim, this year. We played in 6 overtime games. We're 4-2 in those 6 overtime games. Just had every type of late game situation, every type of, had big leads, lost big leads, came from behind, you name it. We kind of experienced it this year. And we didn't always handle those situations well, but I think we learned a lot from them. And I think our guys just really developed a lot of confidence just in the fact that we've been battle tested in all these different scenarios and in a lot of close games. So we talked a lot about that, before that Radford game. It was, hey, we're kind of built for this right now. We've won 8 of our last 10. We've seen every scenario thrown our way this year. We've continued to get better, and you just knocked off the one seed at their place. You're ready to do this here, and Radford's a terrific team, unbelievably well coached by Mike Jones, and really good players. But hey, man, we're ready for this. We're ready for this.
Tim Kraft joining us. Now, you want to talk about being built for something. You've got DJ Laster. He comes out. He hits 14 of 17, including 30 of your team's first 44 points. He scored. He finishes, Tim, with a career-high 32. He said afterwards that he felt like he really couldn't miss. What were you thinking as you watched him?
Man, he was unbelievable, Jim. I mean, he was just playing out of his mind. And it just really started to click for him late in the year. And he's a really good, talented player. He's a senior for us. He's had a really good junior year. We thought he was a guy that could be like an all-conference guy this year. And he ended up being like third team or honorable mention. So he had a good season, but he was a little inconsistent at times. And I think he was a little frustrated at times with how he's playing. But the guy has worked so hard on his game. He's in here, every day in the morning before practice and, getting extra work in. And then, the last couple weeks of the season, he's really started to put it together. He was conference player of the week the last week of the season, where he shot like 75%, in two games. And then had two other great tournament games where he played really well. But he was on another level yesterday. I mean, another level. And it was fun. It was fun to watch. He was feeling it, and you love it for a guy that's put in a lot of work.
You bet. Tim Kraft joining us. Tim, you look at your journey. You were an assistant at Gardner-Webb a while back, and then you spent some time as an assistant at Auburn and East Carolina, and then the head coaching opportunity at Gardner-Webb opens up. At that time, what was your reaction? How excited were you for the chance?
Very, very excited. And my time here, my 3 years here as an assistant, and then time away, I really just, really loved kind of seeing the community we have here on our campus. And it's a small Christian school, really small town. But what's really cool about it is just so many people on our campus that as an assistant, I saw really wanted to just pour into our players and just invest in their lives as people. And, you talk really about having a family environment. Everybody wants that within their program. But we really have it on our campus. And that's something I just recognized as an assistant, and when the opportunity came and the timing was right, hoped we'd have the opportunity to come back. And thankfully our AD Chuck Burke, he brought me back, and it's been great to be here.
It's something I find really interesting. If you go back a little bit, before your days as an assistant coach there, growing up in Florida, you played baseball and basketball both, and the story goes you loved basketball, but you actually received an opportunity to get a partial scholarship at Florida to be a team manager in baseball. Is that story true, and if so, how did that go?
That is true. That's great research, Jim.
There you go.
So I wanted to play college basketball really bad. I was like a Division III level player. I just didn't want to pursue that. And I had this option on the table to go to Florida and like you said, could get a partial scholarship to be a baseball manager. Wasn't something I was super excited about because I really wanted to play, but kind of reluctantly, decided to go to Florida. And it was a great experience. I got a lot of good friends, had, all kind of guys like Mark Ellis, played for Oakland A's. He was my roommate, Brad Wilkerson. Those guys are texting me yesterday. And Andy Lopez was our head coach. And if you're familiar with Coach Lopez,
sure.
We just recently won a national championship at Arizona. And Coach Lopez was texting me yesterday. And so I was a man, I was a baseball manager. I knew I wanted to get into coaching and coach basketball. I had hoped that I'd have a chance to be a manager for the basketball team eventually. And I didn't early on. And then when the opportunity came around to go over to basketball, I was like, my roommates were the baseball guys. I was kind of entrenched in that program and kind of invested in it, and I didn't want to leave. But that's a true story. I was a baseball manager, had a great time doing it, learned a lot from Coach Lopez, and then started coaching high school basketball as soon as I got out of Florida.
And part of that story, Tim Kraft is my guest, part of that story is that Andy Lopez, when guys were to leave the program or school, he would sit down with them and say, hey, listen, what do you want to do in the next 5 years with your life? And I would imagine, Tim, you said to him, the baseball coach, a great baseball coach, I want to be a basketball coach. What do you remember about that conversation? How did that go?
Well, he knew that early on, and he would ask me that, you know, early on, and he would talk to me about coaching, and had a great relationship with him, and when I was done there, it was like, hey, I'll do whatever you want me to do, and I just remember he wrote this, you know, great letter of recommendation, and basically like made me a bunch of copies of it, and said, hey, send it to whoever you want. Give him my phone number, put me on, you know, top of your reference list. He called a lot of guys in the business basketball guys that, you know, he had crossed paths with that he knew. So he was more than supportive. And we played Arizona, you know, a few years back, played at Arizona a few years back when we had McConnell and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Stanley Johnson, those guys. And they actually did a little article in the paper there about my time with Coach Lopez, and so Coach has been great, and he's stayed in touch, and I really learned a lot. And the thing you learned from Coach Lopez was like just like figuring out how to get guys to compete and be tough, and that's something that transcends sports. You know, it goes. You know, every sport you need that. So it was great.
I was gonna say, I love that you got that from a baseball coach. I guess my final thought would be then, the only thing that could have made the story better is if you did get that opportunity with the basketball program to be the manager, because that's what you wanted. Exactly, where was Billy Donovan in all this? He had to know that you were a conscientious guy. He had to know about you. How come that didn't work out?
Yeah, I really never knew Coach Donovan. I worked their camps and, you know, crossed paths with them, and but never really had a much of a personal relationship with them at all. I knew some of the assistant coaches at that time a little better that helped with camp, and because I would work the camp in the summer a couple times, and then I really didn't really get to know Coach Donovan. I still don't really know him well at all. But when I was an assistant at Auburn, you know, would talk to him occasionally on the road and that. But yeah, it was more, you know, it had more to do with my lack of understanding and initiative when I was in college to like network harder and you know, force myself to be involved. And you know, I was just a college kid, you know, trying to have a good time and thinking all that stuff would work itself out later. And when I left later in high school and trying to grind through junior college coach basketball and, you know, trying to climb, you know, the coaching ladder, I would think about it all the time. Like, man, I was an idiot. I should have just done whatever I could do, you know, go do the laundry, go sit in the stands, go, you know, whatever. And I just didn't do it.
Well, we're all like that. You figured it out. You worked it out. And now you just got to spin clock for a few days and find out exactly where you're going to be in the NCAA tournament. Selection Sunday is this coming Sunday. He is the head basketball coach at Gardner-Webb. Tim, great to have you on the show. Nice to have a great jungle debut by you. And I really appreciate the conversation. Look forward to seeing what happens this weekend.
Thanks a lot, Jim. I'm a big fan of the show.
Good night now.